Long ago, and I don't even remember who coined it, the phrase sibling rivalry. Everybody uses it. It's part of our language. I imagine it would be in Webster's if it weren't two words. I think it's an inaccurate term at best. At worst, it's dumb. Let's think about it for a second. Conjure up what, just let your mind go limp. For some of you, that's easier than others. Go blank. Pretend that your spouse just asked you a question. Just go blank. I say, let's do a little word association. Sibling rivalry. What does that conjure up? Well, it conjures up kind of a contention, a struggle, a psychological kind of innate competition between what should be family members. People are supposed to love each other, you know. But no, there's this built-in competition, rivalry for parents' attention, for privileges, for freedom, for perks, for stuff, for space within the home. It's just, I'm going to battle with you, and psychologically speaking, that's exactly what I'm built to do. Now, you might say, I overreact. I don't think so. I don't think sibling rivalry is an accurate term at all. Especially if you look at the nature of the first part of the term, sibling. Sibling. That means, in this context, a little kid, or at the very least, a minor. Now, is it safe to say that your children are at best only partially socialized? At best! At worst, they're not socialized at all. 3-, 4-, 5-year-old, they're just not socialized, you know? They're kind of these immature little creatures. Is it safe to say they're pretty self-centered, don't you think? Don't you think? The younger ones, for sure. Is it safe to say that their impulse control certainly isn't where it could be and where you hope it would be when they're 40? Is it safe to say that they think what they want is kind of most important? Is it safe to say that their self-control is only partially at best developed? All right. You probably all answered yes to all those. Now, if you have more than one of those partially socialized, partially moralized human beings living under the same roof, approximately 2,100 square feet, you're going to have contention. And it has nothing to do with innate rivalry. It has nothing to do with built-in competition. It has nothing to do with psychological struggles. It has to do with I'm living with a difficult person here. True. And I'm difficult myself because I'm little. So the most natural thing in the world is that kind of bickering and squabbling. It's natural. It just is. It doesn't have anything to do with rivalry that's built in contention. Sibling quibbling, I think, is a more accurate term. Some years ago, I wrote a book called Back to the Family. And the premise of the book was, let's interview great families around the country and find out how they're doing it. They've got great kids. They're nominated for this book by National State Teachers of the Year who have observed these kids and think, yes, these are just one quality bunch of kids. So we interviewed the parents. We said, how are you doing this? Tell us about your victories, your struggles, and your frustrations. Well, the number one discipline frustration to emerge was sibling quibbling. And that reflects, I think, most American families. Now, there's a condition here. You need to have more than one kid. If you've got one kid and you have sibling quibbling, you got real problems. Sibling quibbling is the least of your worries. Mom, tell him to quit looking at me. Who's looking at you, honey? He's looking at me. Who is looking at you, sweetheart? So, we're going to make an assumption here. Sibling quibbling takes two or more children. Like Bill Cosby says, you only got one kid, you're not really a parent. Because if something goes bad, somebody does something wrong, you know who did it. You got more than one, all of a sudden it gets difficult, especially if they're both mobile and sneaky and weaselly and wily. But I repeat myself in describing children. Number one, frustration. Why? Well, first of all, it's recurrent. Any misbehavior that occurs at a very high frequency, and sibling quibbling does. If you got two kids who spend any amount of time together, you are looking at 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 times a day they're mistreating each other. Oh, Dr. Ray, that's too much. Wait a minute. Let me illustrate. Gina, you had it. No, I didn't. I was just playing with it. Give it to me. No, jerk, leave it alone. Mom, he had it. I did not have it. Now, to your untrained ear, that sounds like one episode of sibling quibbling. It was five. There were minimally five pieces of mistreatment in that ball of wax. But what we tend to do is we tend to lump it under one big episode, one interaction that was ugly. When indeed, any one of those comments, any one of those dirty looks, any one of those grabs, any one of those pushes, any one of those jumping off the rope, soap in the eyes, gouging, and throwing the metal chair across the ring could have been considered mistreatment. So, you now have very high frequency misbehavior. There is a corollary. High frequency misbehavior leads to parental inconsistency. Because we're human, we can't respond at that level. There's too much. So what we tend to do is we ignore or we warn. Get away. Just leave it alone. Just put it up. Put it up then. If you guys can't play with it right, just put it away. We do stuff like that. Get in here. Look, get. No, she didn't do anything to you. She didn't do anything to you. There was no reason for you to talk to her like that. Where do you learn to call people names, you little dummy? So, typically, we don't discipline it. We really don't. We discipline it when we hood it off, when it gets to us. When I got to still step in, I can't take it anymore. But you see what happens. Your consistency level quickly drops below 10%. And any discipline that's hitting below 10% is not going to work. I mean, you can fire a bazooka off over their head, it's probably not going to work at 10%. There's too much of probability of success for the kids, because they know 90% of the time nothing happens, other than maybe mom or dad gets mad. That's about it. The other problem with sibling quibbling is the vagary factor, the unknown factor, the ignorance factor. You don't know who did what to whom, when, where, and how much. You can't figure it out. Why? They won't tell you. Besides, they're giving you a stereophonic discord at 130 decibels. Their versions of what happened are wildly disparate, kind of like marital therapy. So what do you do? How do you figure it out? How do you know? You want to be fair, don't you? Most parents aren't concerned with being fair. They want peace. Sibling quibbling. Some of the, I think, most foolish pieces of advice given to parents by expert types, with people with letters after their names, you know, kind of like me, is surrounding sibling quibbling. Here's one of my favorite all-time bad pieces of advice. Let them work it out themselves. I was 10 years old. I had an 8-year-old sister and a 5-year-old sister. If my mother would have let us work it out ourselves, I'd have won every time. I was stronger. I was faster. I was bigger. I'm 10. She was 5. I win. Work it out? Okay, look, I know we're fighting about this, but don't you think it would be good if we found a win-win? I'll let you play with the truck for 10 minutes. No. You're 5 years old. I'm 10. I remember what it was like to be a 5-year-old girl once, so why don't you play with it for half an hour? I'm older and I'm more capable of self-control and delay of gratification, and what I will do is I will just sit quietly here. I'll read. No! As a matter of fact, I'll watch you play, because I really want to give you positive attention as your big brother, and what we can do is after you've had enough with the truck, then I'll just come over and play with it, if it's okay with you, because I really realize we need to work this out. Now, I only have one condition. When you grow up and you're 22 years old, will you introduce all your girlfriends to me? No self-respecting kid is going to work it out without somebody getting hurt or mistreated most of the time. Not because they're mean or evil, but because they're kids. They're going to work this out. What are they going to work it out? I'm going to work it out so I win. Now, that's a really bad piece of advice, because also what it does is it puts the children in the position of being parents. Here, little brother, I will interact with you in such a way that you develop conflict resolution skills. Because, you know, I am 9 and you're only 6, and I'm a lot wiser in the ways of the world. I would say that zero tolerance is your best policy for sibling quibbling. But Dr. Ray, if I had a zero tolerance, I'd be disciplining 56 times a day. You just said so yourself. Maybe initially, and it isn't going to be that much. But even if it's high frequency, very quickly your children will come to realize, I need to treat everybody in this family with respect, including my brother or my sisters. Is it right or is it wrong to mistreat someone? If you think it's wrong, then you got to do something about it. You can't just allow it to occur up to a certain level. Well, it's okay to mistreat somebody with nasty words, dirty looks, yanks on the arm, but no punching in the head. Now, that's mistreatment that goes a little bit too far. Is it right or wrong? And do you want to teach your children to treat a sibling with respect, and you will not permit mistreatment? It's okay to not permit something. Contrary to 50 years of the experts trying to tell you, if you not permit something, your kids are going to rebel. Sibling quibbling. It's high frequency. It's like nailing jello to a wall, figuring out who did it. However, if you take a zero tolerance toward it, you will watch it dramatically decline. And you know what else you'll watch? I can guarantee it. You will watch your kids treat each other better. Because they're not allowed to mistreat each other, so they either ignore each other or they get along. And most kids, because they live under the same roof and because there is a family tie there, however frayed, will get along.